Hey everybody, welcome to My Evening Movie This Week. I'm your host, Nick Hoffman, recording secretly in a library, so drinking all that sweet library goodness. In the meantime, we're talking about Ricochet, a strange movie with a crazy guy Nick Hoffman, a serial killer, and kills Jesse the Body Ventura in a white supremacist samurai fight. Also, Denzel Washington is the hero. It's something. If you are listening, thank you. Download the videos. Also, make sure if you are not a member of our Patreon, you become one. And in the meantime, I'm getting back to work. Thanks.
Dust off your VHS tapes, gentlemen. We are watching a forgotten action thriller from 1991. I'm host Nick Hoffman, and on panel we have tonight
Atlanta author Matthew W. Quinn.
Hello, this is Daniel, a contributor to PopDose.com, and I also have been plotting revenge against Nick for 7 years now.
Another Nick.
And Jeremy.
So tonight we have found I don't know if you guys had ever heard of this movie.
I had not.
I hadn't either.
I had seen bits and pieces of it on TV as a kid.
Yeah. Of course you had, Jeremy. Of course you had.
Well, I mean, there's a lot here that they have to clearly edit out, but this does seem like the kind of thing that would just be on TV, and it is, in fact, an HBO movie, so I'm sure it was one they had in constant rotation.
It feels like a movie that I think it would have been Vox, because Joel Silver's producing this, that he produced, and the studio's like, no, we're not going to make our money back, so let's just dump it on TV and HBO bought it.
Yeah, because I think it was on, might have been in theaters for a very short time, because I looked at the like box office, and there was a box office who I thought was a TV movie.
There may very well have been. I mean, even if it was just to qualify for the Oscars, but no, this was not. Hey, you play in theaters, you might get an editing nomination
that
or something.
That empty pool, that's production design Oscar right there.
Well, this is pretty
supporting for Ice-T. Yeah.
Hey, well, that might work. I like his the way he handled his character and. The script actually assumes people are intelligent with some of the references they make.
So to answer your question, it was made by Silver Productions, as you can imagine, Joel Silver, and HBO, with the understanding that they would get exclusive rights after it got distributed in theaters. And so it was distributed by Warner Brothers. So it actually made $22 million, which is low, but you know, there was a movie like this every 6 weeks. So.
Especially in 1991. Right. I mean, this is kind of a Lethal Weapon-y movie.
Very Lethal Weapon-y. I mean, this is the era of Time Cop, so anything's up for grabs.
Yeah, if Murtaugh slowly becomes Riggs over the course of the movie and has to fight the Joker.
Yeah, basically. That's a good summary of what's going on in this movie.
Yeah, fair enough. Matt, do you want to give us a synopsis?
Okay, so we start out in the late 1980s, actually mid-1980s, because they talk about Ronald Reagan and the Olympics and stuff.
1984.
Yeah, where Denzel Washington captures John Lithgow, who's this hitman after he just kills some drug dealers, and he manages to parlay that into becoming a detective instead of a beat cop, and then from there into the assistant district attorney. Meanwhile, the hitman, who I keep referring to on Twitter as Evil John Lithgow, is in prison becoming more and more freakishly obsessed with Styles, Denzel Washington's character. And so he eventually engineers a prison break with the help of some prison Nazis and devotes himself to tormenting Styles and driving him insane.
Yeah.
That's good.
He tries to wreck Styles' life by like faking corruption, faking a sex tape with him.
Well, and faking sex with children, if I recall correctly.
They plant kiddie porn on a friend of his. Or
yes, yes.
And leave the letter that says, I can't forgive myself for what we did.
Yeah,
and
we
whatever.
Did. Yeah. Not I did.
Subtle. For the context. The subtlety. It's important in this movie, though. Well, subtlety's not important, but the...
This is a very smart movie.
Oh, boy.
They make literary puns.
I'll defend this movie, but I would not call it smart.
The movie assumes people are intelligent. Like, they make jokes about Tolstoy and Viking funerals. They don't explain.
So
it has Denzel pulling a gun out of his jockstrap.
I just had to watch a movie that we're going to do in a bit. I won't say which one, but they make a Marx Brothers reference, and trust me, they don't trust the audience as smart.
Yeah, this movie, I, 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 I did not get the feeling they treated us as intelligent at all in this.
But you don't watch this movie
No.
I mean, like 5 minutes in, people are getting their chest ripped open by a shotgun. That's why you watch this fucking movie.
Yeah, we gotta start this, like...
Gasper No action movie.
Yeah.
This is and what happens when a Tim Burton movie runs into a Wes Anderson movie. Because, like... or whatever. Like, it's just...
So Wednesday Addams says something depressing, and then we get the musical cue of me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Out in somewhere, we're having like a carnival scene out of Big Fish. Like it's colorful, it's bright. The cops are just popping popcorn. Meanwhile, Scarface is happening across the street.
Well, if Scarface had a stupid little minion with a mullet who keeps causing problems.
What happened before that is a basketball game where Denzel and Ice-T are playing.
It's Denzel and Kevin Pollak playing against Ice-T.
And the guy is a cheating motherfucker in this movie, let's be clear.
He travels,
he fouls, he's just, frankly, he's being Ice-T.
Well, although I will say, if you were playing basketball against Kevin Pollak, I think you'd check him to the paint, too.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you're 7 feet taller than he is. So. But this is the white men can't jumpiest white men can't jump scene you could imagine.
And it came out 2 years before white
and
men
can't jump. And they even say that, you know, stop playing like a white boy.
They do. That is a line that Denzel says to Kevin Pollak.
Probably the first of many things that happens in this movie you probably couldn't get away with today.
it's something.
Yeah.
Then we cut to a carnival scene where, on one hand, there's lights and colors and kids playing, and also
Denzel's having a discussion about the. A woman that was apparently watching him play basketball and was like recovering his shoes, and he's like having some sort of Tarantino-esque dialogue about, if a woman recovers her shoes at the basketball court, that means she likes you. And then Kevin Pollak has to argue, and he's like, no, that's an intimate thing, man.
And I believe her line was, "What did you buy these shoes in the dark?" Which is a pretty good line. Ugly ass basketball shoes from the 90s.
The '80s in this case.
Fair. Right.
These are some Reagan-era kicks, mommy.
But anyway. And as people are, and I think this is where Kevin Pollak does his first of many impressions, including doing a Shatner right here. What's that show you like, Star Trek?
Oh, yeah, he's talking about seeing last night's episode, and it's a classic Star Trek episode, and it's like, oh, God.
Was the Next Generation on at this point? I thought it was.
It was, but it's Kevin Pollak doing an impersonation. That's what you did in the 80s, and I guess 90s, but you'd hire a comedian who you knew what he was and just let him do a little bit of his act. It's like Dennis Leary in, is it Judge Dredd he's in?
No. Demolition Man?
Demolition Man, or, I mean, God... We have Rob Schneider in 2000 things that shouldn't exist.
Rated PG-13.
The Animal. But yeah.
Okay. Which I saw in theaters back in the day. Not proud of it, but I did.
So I was looking this up at the time, but this is obviously the end of the first Bush's first term. And apparently Kevin Pollak worked with Dana Carvey on his George Bush impression. So you can thank Pollock for that, I guess?
Persian Gulf there, Bar.
It's pretty good.
But anyway. So at this point, Kevin Pollock and they were doing a joke-em-up. And then we have a blood orgy upstairs, apparently.
What happens upstairs is they're at a fairgrounds, and across the street is some sort of drug deal going on, which leads to the ultimate 90s trope. Did I hear a briefcase opening? And John Lithgow is apparently there to rob everyone. He's there to steal the briefcase full of money and I guess the briefcase full of drugs, but...
Yeah, and it's like a double cross going on, apparently, and yada yada. None of this matters.
And his minion is like the inside man who obviously is giving himself away because there's a whole thing about you unlocked it with your key.
Right, and then he like literally hits the guy after that happens...
But yeah, so, I mean, at this point, Lithgow is, like, stealing the money, he's running downstairs, the cops hear the gunshots, they're chasing after him, and this woman, who is an extra, she doesn't matter at all, but is not looking at active guns. Like, there's a shootout going on, and she just strolls across right in front of John Lithgow. This is the point where he starts getting, where Denzel Washington starts getting naked for, I would say no reason, but we know the reason.
Because Denzel Washington
is in incredible shape here.
I was about to say early 90s Denzel Washington, that's why he's getting naked.
What are you doing?
Well, before that happens, he's giving a whole bunch of, like, Dirty Harry speeches where he's, like, going, well, I'll shoot you, and then I'll have to go back to the department and fill out paperwork and eat donuts.
That's right.
I like donuts, but I hate paperwork. That was a shit Clint Eastwood.
Yeah,
So
John Lithgow takes a girl hostage, and he starts taking his clothes off to prove he doesn't have any hidden guns. Only he very much does have a hidden gun, and he kneecaps John Lithgow with it.
Oh, Denzel Washington in that state definitely has a hidden gun.
That's right. Hey,
well, he makes a joke about that, too.
Yeah, I know he does.
He talks about his dick a lot in this movie, which is also quite something. But the whole kind of gag is Lithgow is so baffled by a man who would get naked, I guess, that he pulls the gun down. Whatever.
Denzel says he would be his hostage if Lithgow lets the girl go, and he's considering it, I think, and then that's when they pull the secret gun out of his jock strap and shoot Lithgow in the kneecap.
Right, and crazy enough that he had shot the kneecap matters in a little bit here. Someone catches on camera this half-naked copman defuse a hostage situation. And I guess it was noteworthy because the cop actually arrested the guy and didn't shoot him to death.
If only he had. Of course, he'd have no movie.
That's right. But regardless, this videographer lady, which the videographer also kind of matters later, but one way or another.
Because everyone keeps filming him and various exploits and selling them to TV news back when that was apparently a thing.
Oh, yeah, this is the year of Rodney King, right?
No, this is a year before Rodney King.
Oh, this is the year before Rodney King. Well, then Rodney King proves this right. So at this point, we kind of start moving forward in time. We jump 7 years. After, we show John Lithgow in jail.
We're going to skip over the scene where the woman DA of this county shows up in the police locker room.
He's got only a conveniently placed locker door.
We see a naked Denzel for like two frames or whatever.
Apparently that's enough for this DA because she promotes him to her office and as a detective, and then in the subsequent years he becomes the assistant DA, which I didn't know he was a lawyer.
Line with Kevin Pollak where he says he is in fact in law school.
Yeah, because he was talking to his eventual wife at the basketball court, talking about how he did his thesis on Moby Dick and how he was in law school at night. That was before he revealed he was a cop.
Oh, there you go. Now, what was her name? Gail Wallens was the DA, right?
Mm-hmm. I recognize Lithgow.
Gail Wallens was the news anchor from Die Hard, who's also in this movie.
Yeah, apparently this is a shared universe with Die Hard.
Well, it's the same producer, so you gotta do what you gotta do. But after that, we do kind of flash forward, although the movie's rather ambiguous about the timeline.
Events take place in 91, 92, because they talk about the Soviet Union collapsing on TV.
The last two acts take place in 91, which is when this was released, but leading up to that, it's really unclear how the timeline works.
Yeah, there's no title cards or anything, and I think someone casually mentioned that John Lithgow had been in jail for 7 years. Other than that, there's very few indications on the passage of time. Other than, hey, he's got two kids all of a sudden.
No, there was one bit where he had one kid, and then a later bit where he had two. So the movie's present day, he has two kids.
Yeah, but I mean,
So there was a middle time skip. I think maybe when he does that DA speech about the strangler, which I comment on Twitter, he's engaging in grandstanding like Jack McCoy from the Law and Order shows, except Jack McCoy is a sanctimonious prick, and Denzel Washington's a lot cooler.
Speaking of sanctimonious pricks, Jesse Ventura's in this movie.
Oh, yeah, one of the meanwhile, John Lithgow has this whole plot involving prison Nazis.
Oh, yeah. No, well, he's got a couple subplots. First, there's that scene with him and the, I don't even know what's called, the prison librarian who's offering everyone books.
Yeah.
And he uses War and Peace and the Bible as a splint.
Yeah, so maybe that's why he never seems to have any problems with that leg later in the movie, because I don't remember him limping. There's no Chekhov's kneecap in this one that I can recall.
Well, that's what's going on. I mean, he healed himself.
And then he apparently causes problems in the jail, to put him in the cell, and they give him, put him in a cell with Jesse Ventura. I guess they think Jesse's going to beat him up or molest him or something. And he just destroys Jesse Ventura.
Yeah, to Lithgow's credit, it's kind of believable. You see Jesse Ventura and you think, okay, Ventura's going to fuck him up, but Lithgow, he looks like he could take him.
So they end up in some sort of, like a Nazi gang has their own like Mortal Kombat in the prison cafeteria with his little minion cheerleading him on.
Oh, where they duct tape a whole bunch of like phone books and random shit onto them in order to give them some sort of body armor.
Yeah, it's like the prison cafeteria version of some of the fights in Highlander.
By the way, I was mistaken before. The DA in this movie is Lindsay Wagner, a.k.a. the Bionic Woman.
Oh, that's funny. Small world.
This is, of course, where he kills Jesse Ventura.
Yes, he kills him during that Nazi fight, and then...
Well, I mean, we talked about their introduction, right?
Yeah, I mentioned it. They put him in the cell, and he thinks he's going to get into some trouble if he gets by drift, and he just beats the hell out of him. And starts setting up his crazy wall.
Well, and keeps his pornography wall. Now, nothing like
pornography means pictures of Denzel Washington.
Well, I was going to say, because he steals pictures of women and put Denzel Washington's head on them, which is something. This movie also read Silence of the Lambs. They didn't really get it, but they read it.
It rubs a Time magazine on the skin, or else it gets the prison beat down again.
Yes, it does, Precious. I mean, yeah.
I'd prison shank me. Would you prison shank me?
But yeah, so at this point they have a lance fight, and John Lithgow kills Jesse the Body Ventura.
He sure does. He shoves like his shiv spear like through his chest after seeing he's got Denzel Washington's picture as a chest plate.
Which means he went through his stuff.
It's the news article that that's right. John Lithgow was keeping in that prison cell because he was obsessed with getting out and destroying Washington.
My scrapbook. This is just in a movie that's crazy. Every time you're like, this is a little bit weird, kind of bored. It gets crazy again.
Yeah,
and that's kind of what happens.
Someone let him into the prison copy room, and he keeps making copy after copy after copy of Denzel Washington's face.
Yeah,
and he's got this like this insane wall in the prison cell.
I will also say there's a weird.
It's Charlie's wall from It's Always Sunny. That's what's going on.
It's totally.
Is that the one where the strings are all connected?
Carol.
That's right.
This is also at this point there's a scene with a bookmobile guy which becomes important in the second crazy act of this, right?
Well, before we get to that, can we also mention Gary Busey is in this movie? And one of his lines is, may the best Aryan win.
That's right. I mean, this is an Aryan Brotherhood fight, which should be very clear. This is a racist fight, which John Lithgow kind of uses to get out of prison, but then kills everyone. It's a very specific plan he has.
Their purpose is served, and their loose ends, especially when he needs to fake his own death. We'll get to that.
Oh, that seems phenomenal.
So, I mean, we get a couple overlaps here. Lithgow kills Ventura and wants to break the Aryan Brotherhood out of prison along with himself. We see Denzel in a courtroom arguing for a murderer to be put away in some weird closing argument.
he's a public defender. Or no, he's the ADA, right?
Yeah.
He's the district attorney. So the public defender on the other side... When he starts giving this final statement, the guy says, well, like, he gives up. I don't know if that's how it works in court, but he just closes his binder and says,
yeah, he's
as though the closing statement were so good.
It's a Jack McCoy level appeal to emotion, except he's not so shrill and obnoxious.
He's pretty shrill and obnoxious.
Jack McCoy is so much more shrill and obnoxious. I hate Jack McCoy.
Who's Jack McCoy?
From Law and Order.
Oh, God, help me.
Dong dong.
The sanctimonious, obnoxious prosecutor with who likes to make speeches.
Well, we also get a scene here that I'm assuming Jack McCoy would never be involved in, where Denzel visits a drug lab. And at first I thought the twist was going to be he was secretly running it, but no, it's Ice-T's drug lab.
And he's telling them, you know, you better not do anything to this community center I want to build.
Yes.
And then...
Well, going full Heath Ledger Joker with a grenade that isn't really a grenade.
Yeah.
Again, whenever you think they're not going to do anything with this scene, they go crazy. I've never seen a movie like this.
And he basically makes this whole speech to the gang about, you know, how they shouldn't mess up the kids and, you know, momentarily shames them all.
How they shouldn't deal near the schools that this youth center is going to be around, and just how they should. Yeah.
He goes down a list of things that it's very bad.
And do you think Ice-T is going to care what you tell him to do?
No, absolutely not. Although, their relationship is also kind of weird throughout this. Other than basketball, they apparently kind of grew up together.
Yeah, yeah. They're friends, but then he sees that he's hotwired a car, so, like, we're not playing basketball anymore, well, so they're estranged.
There's a scene later where Denzel's talking to Ice-T about how... he watched him bury his mom and bury his brother. And
his brother who lost his head, yeah, literally.
And they never found it. But, yeah, I mean, at first, when I first saw this, like, wait, are these two, like, cousins or brothers or related in some way? I don't think that's the case.
I think Ice-T's mom was a member of Denzel Washington's dad's church, because Denzel Washington's dad is a preacher.
Yes, that actually makes a lot of sense.
Which comes back again in...
See, it's so complex. This is a smart movie.
I knew you'd agree with me.
But yeah, I mean, this is, you know, paint by numbers, it's working this way. And essentially, the next two things that collide is there's a fundraiser and Lithgow's going to escape from jail.
Well, he does escape from jail during the fundraisers when he sends that $10,000 cash.
Oh, my God, which is a weird scene. Okay, so let's break him out of jail. There's a parole hearing.
He has an improvised gun that's made out of, like, I guess a pen tube or something.
After talking about how he's going to have sex with the parole officer's wife and daughter.
Wait, we got to give some credit here. And then going to your house to thank me? No, I'm going to have sex with your wife. And then your daughter, and then your dog.
Well, you gentlemen, I'm not going to have sex with my wife. I'm going to have sex with Bill's wife.
And, like, the prison, like, the Aryan gang, like, they attack the parole board and disguise themselves as a parole board.
We have to describe this scene, man. This is, like, where Tom Hanks lives in the terminal. It's like an unfinished wing of the court, and there's just convicts with chainsaw, with saws, fixing a wall.
It's not a chainsaw, but there is a scene where
a circular saw.
Yeah, the circular saw goes into a man's torso, and we see that.
But again, it's like they knew to put tarps down. This is such a weird scene without texture.
Well, you've got John Lithgow, who's like an evil mastermind, and the Nazis are his muscle, so he's probably planned this.
No shit.
Yeah, that's one of the weak parts of this movie, because there are scenes later where he couldn't possibly have done that, Lithgow's character.
But he does have his minion Kim doing a lot of this.
Okay, so they break out of prison, they kill everyone in the room, they take their uniforms, their suits, and whatever, and they try to make a prison escape.
Hey,
bookmobile car.
Jeremy, tell me what happens during the prison escape, because this is just wild.
It's some more gleeful violence that this movie is known for. Yeah, it's just a lot of shotgunning. There's a great fall from the prison tower. A cop gets shot and just falls, and, you know, the shot just holds on him falling all the way down. It's great. A stuntman got paid, so let's show it.
Yep.
The bookmobile guy remembers John Lithgow from like 7 years before. He's like, I knew you'd do well when I gave you the Bible. Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they steal the bookmobile instead of whatever this car was that gets tore, like, completely torn up.
Either way, they all manage to escape, but Lithgow kills a bunch of his co-conspirators in this escape plan.
Which I'm guessing that's where he gets a $10,000 from.
Probably.
And, wait, how?
I think he had it set up that though they had friends and he had money.
Oh, right. Makes sense. And then, even the driver who, I mean, again, like Dark Knight or something, he expects to get out with the Joker. And he gets shot in the face. I mean, yep. this mm-hmm. movie, I guess.
And they,
funny, he told me something similar.
And they, and so meanwhile, they set it up so the driver, they think is Blake, evil John Lithgow, because they put him in the truck and roll it off a cliff.
Oh, so which explodes before it even hits anything.
Yep.
They just push it off and it explodes.
And then he makes
air.
A comment about Viking funeral.
Yeah.
And but, that's how he fakes his death, because he swapped a... dental records with whoever was...
Yeah, oh, that's what they were doing in the prison file cabinet.
Yeah.
Sure. And, I mean, Joel Silver, it's in the name, Jeremy.
Yeah.
It's explosion for no reason. It'd be the same if it was Golden and Globus. Like, just blow it up. Let's just blow it up.
Golden and Globus wouldn't look nearly this interesting. Okay, it kind of would, but it would be done for, like... It's like, okay, we've got a firecracker and a miniature. That's what we're going to use to film this shot. Whereas Joel Silver's like, you know what? We've got an actual truck. Let's blow it up.
Yeah, this is more HBO money, I guess. The next basic movement of this is that Denzel Washington and his wife are going to a fundraiser, right?
One of them telethon things, which watching that, it's like, when do I get my free tote bag?
This is a, I guess, kind of...
But was this before or after John Lithgow is recording him making jokes that he then splices into the sex tape later?
That's later.
Where that's later.
He disguises himself as a homeless man and like follows him into a restaurant.
That's later. This is when Lithgow sends him $10,000 anonymously.
Yeah, so Lithgow cuts the power to his house. And the kids are there with the babysitter that's established earlier. Lithgow comes in. Well, I mean, she calls the power company... and then calls the owner of the house, I guess. And Denzel's wife answers the phone, and she goes, "Oh, the power company man is here. Now, I've owned my house long enough. You've never let anyone into your house, ever."
And that scene is so creepy. Like, he's pretending to be all friendly with him, using all these exact words that you think he's going to be...
He pretends it's Denzel's kid's birthday, and was like... Having them blow out candles and shit. It's so weird.
And he uses all these things that, like, he's going to do something bad, but he's just saying these words indicate he's not. And then he roofies them.
I don't know about you, Matt and Jeremy, but I think if I tried to do that with Nick's daughter, he'd punch me.
Yeah, no, it's also you don't let anyone in your house, ever.
To be fair, he had the right uniform.
Yeah, well, I wonder how
into your house. Power company doesn't go to your house. They don't run your house.
Well, is it maybe the babysitter? How old was the babysitter? Was supposed to be a teenager.
We're just pretending that babysitters are ever good at their job. This is just This is.
and he roofies them, and puts the kids to bed. Like, yeah. I made a comment on the Twitter, and the children were all nestled, are snug in their beds, and they really were.
Yes. Well, I mean, she's had the same sort of Sunday morning that I'm sure. Myself and Nick have had, where they wake up and are asked questions and are like, I don't remember.
So, what Lithgow is doing, actually, is he's setting up recording devices and cameras in John Lithgow's house. That's the whole point, because they're going to use that footage for later, the rest of this movie, which is crazy. At that point, you know, like you said, Denzel comes home with his wife. The babysitter's asleep on the couch, and you know it's later than they thought. It's not a big deal. They don't notice anything, and we just
2 a.m. I think.
Yeah, but we're still coming off this kind of weird high because John Lithgow has written into the telethon, and there's this weird, highly, vaguely sexual letter about how much he loves Denzel Washington.
You changed my life.
Yeah, it's very serial killery, and inside is a bunch of loose bills. Covered in blood, that gets him to the $10,000 limit.
And then he proceeds to go, because the city council member is like, I'm going to deposit it in the night box, and then he gets kidnapped, drugged, I think they force him to make a suicide note, put him in women's clothing, and hang him.
Yeah, and fill his briefcase with a bunch of child pornography, which,
yes.
Oh boy.
Magazines. These.
I'm pretty sure those magazines wouldn't have existed even in 1991.
I mean, this is pre-internet. Magazines are all they had.
That's true.
All right, all right.
And as we might have mentioned earlier, the note is written in such a way to kind of implicate Denzel Washington to the point the DA is kind of chewing him out.
Well, something about a trip to Miami and how the city councilman, who, by the way, was present at Denzel's naked scene in the locker room earlier.
Yeah, everyone's like the same 12 characters are all that exist in this world.
Right, and apparently there was something in Miami where he suggests that Denzel used public funds from LA County to finance, I don't know,
did this guy's parodia. Matt Gaetz's favorite movie?
Whose favorite movie?
Matt Gaetz.
Oh yeah, big time.
100%.
He took notes from this. Damn.
No, I imagine Matt Gaetz is more of a canon fan. This is too intellectual for him.
It's a very smart movie.
But I wouldn't say it's a very smart movie. I'd just say it's more intellectual than what Matt Gaetz can handle.
Yeah.
Stupid.
Oh, Florida,
bastard.
Underage sex.
Venmo.
Stealing campaign funds.
It's all there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's literally the same thing.
Yeah. And so, does anything happen after the suicide and before the kidnapping?
Not really. I mean, that's what happens immediately. I mean, Denzel's trying to, like, convince the DA that he had nothing to do with this and the note's a lie and his friend wouldn't have committed suicide. But immediately after that is the kidnapping.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, what's the line when he gets kidnapped? John Lithgow shows up and Denzel's like,
Jesus Christ.
And Lithgow's like, close enough or something.
Yep.
Yeah, and then while he's distracted, his little minion, Cold Cox, Denzel Washington, they stuff him in the car.
Yep, pistol whips him.
And next comes the Silence of the Lambs mind games.
Yeah. He keeps injecting him with, like, speedballs or something, and he would, like, lose consciousness and wake up in weird positions, including first in this weird... Okay, it's a hotel swimming pool that's been draped and set up to look like a motel room.
Yeah.
And he's been given a speedball and has sex with his prostitute, which is then filmed.
Who gives him the clap.
Who gives him gonorrhea, which is a lot. They then, apparently at some point in the stupor, Denzel glimpses this weird dolphin logo from the hotel, which comes back.
Well, plus they have a recording of the two of them where the prostitute's saying one thing and Denzel's saying things like, I'm the assistant DA. I'm the assistant DA, and I just suddenly turned into Sylvester Stallone. You gotta do what I say.
Yeah, and it all comes from the audio, which was recorded in his house, which really doesn't matter much, but specifically that one restaurant scene that Matt was talking about earlier, where he's dressed up like a hobo. It sneaks into the bar. Now, I've been in a lot of bars. If I ever saw some dude with, like, a recording device recording the wall, I think I would tell someone.
Yeah.
At
this point in my notes, I was trying to describe what was happening during this pool scene, and I was like, how did Lithgow plan all of this? This is some Monte Cristo level bullshit.
Well, I said y'all that the TV tropes linked to villain Sue, the all-powerful, all-competent villain.
That's what this is! I mean, it's impossible for Lithgow to have done this from prison.
Well, maybe he set it up after he escaped from prison. I mean, he has a whole week to do this, because that's when the flight out to Mexico is.
A whole week? No, that's not enough time to do all this.
Well, okay, recording in the restaurant and suicide day one, kidnapping day two, prostitute day three.
This is back to Matt Quinn's How to Schedule a Serial Killer.
Yeah, Aaron Lee.
It's an HGTV show where we organize your serial killing in 1 week or less.
Google Calendar is your friend.
It's about to join the This American Life network.
but anyway, I mean,
at this point, the cards begin to fall.
And then once they've had their rape scene, they dump him out in the street with all the homeless people.
We actually get the best scene in this movie around here when...
The third time he's naked for no reason?
Close enough. When Denzel is just losing his mind and all the evidence is stacked against him, and he's trying to run to save his kids, I think, from some sort of school rehearsal. And he's wearing nothing but his boxers and a pink bathrobe. Denzel Washington running in a pink bathrobe.
Yeah, who made that decision?
Whoever it is deserves a Pulitzer.
Yeah, because Denzel Washington really is not helping himself half the time. He's like, I'm not crazy.
I think he was talking about how good he looked in his bathrobe.
That was an awesome bathroom.
And he goes crazy because he thinks that John Lithgow's at the kids' rehearsal because he found a tape.
Yes, please explain.
John Lithgow left a tape in the house and told with a note that says "Watch the tape," and it's John Lithgow like standing over his daughter's bed with an axe. So then he runs the daughter's like school play with a gun and detains Bozo the Clown.
Which apparently he was too hungover to go to, which I think is a problem for someone.
And he does that in front of several prominent people, including a member of Congress from that district.
And someone filmed him and sold it to the TV network.
Someone is John Lithgow.
Not TMZ or anything. The TV network.
Oh, yes. The generic local news, awful haired everything. This is very 1991. We haven't been talking about Kevin Pollak because he's terrible.
He's kind of just...
He's just there. Yeah.
He doesn't add much to anything. He shows up later in a suit, too, so he's assistant DA, I guess. But he really adds literally nothing to this whole anything.
Except he gets killed later.
I thought he makes it.
No, John Lithgow tries to frame him for shooting him by shooting him from above, throwing the gun at him so he catches it, and it said, your prints are on the gun.
Oh, yeah, that scene.
But that doesn't even work. The bullets would be coming in from above. He would have had to shot him on the ground level. I mean, he's too clever for his own good there.
Well, you're assuming that they care at that point.
Yeah, the movie just needs to end at that point. Not in a negative way. It's just, it's a train falling down a hill. Like, it's at some point.
So, yeah.
John Lithgow keeps setting him up to get into more and more trouble, and meanwhile, he's losing his mind and prefacing it. It's like Gaslight crossed with Lethal Weapon.
Yeah.
And I mean, at this point, as well, like, he's trying to ruin this marriage by making it look like with the gonorrhea stuff and then the prostitute film. So at one point, Denzel tries to take the tape of John Lithgow to prove that the guy's still alive, because no one believes he's alive. They think he died in the book explosion.
Oh, to his boss, the DA, and then it turns out to be a...
And that Weasley guy who's sitting behind her constantly.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Denzel Washington is running down the street in the bathrobe, henchmen crept into his house and switched the tapes.
Yeah. Right. And so instead, the tape he gives to his boss is him having sex with the prostitute.
In the empty pool.
In the empty pool. Which then, when they go visit, the pool is actually filled with old women jazzercising.
You know, one of the effective things about this movie is Denzel Washington acting and trying to get himself out of this situation by explaining what the truth is. He's like, okay, so there's this guy, Blake. I mean, I know you think he's dead, but Blake's still alive, and this whole thing, he orchestrated this whole thing with this prostitute in this place. No, it might have been this place. And Denzel Washington, no matter what he does, I can't think of a bad performance he's really ever given.
Have you seen Two Guns?
No, I have not.
Him and Mark Wahlberg?
Oh, God,
that's
help
a purely
me.
Paycheck movie.
Yeah, okay, I mean, that's fair, Jeremy.
It can't all be about pilots who are alcoholics.
No.
Sometimes he made some bad stuff.
Yeah, so meanwhile, he's like having a nervous breakdown, and everyone thinks he's really insane.
Yeah, he's lost it.
Well, what he does is he takes his family, because he's worried Blake, John Lithgow, is going to kill them, to Ice-T's like drug lab.
Drops them off at the crack house. It's really something, because they're all dressed like... Like not very nicely, and these tweakers come up, and she grabs her kids. It's a something scene. Don't worry, you're safe here.
Thanks, Ice-T. Where this movie gets its R rating or TVMA rating is in the smash cut to the next scene where Denzel's in a fetish club.
Is this before or after he beats up the Nazi bookstore owner?
This is after he does. He goes to the white supremacy bookstore and beats the crap out of people.
Right.
Which is something. It's something
because the because he's trying to find because the setup was that the Nazis were going to smuggle John Lithgow out of the country.
That's,
and the bookstore was the front.
That's the scene right before Kevin Pollak gets killed because he's there, and then as the
yeah the henchman shows up.
Right.
Yeah.
And then he dies in the next scene. Pollak does.
Yeah.
But anyway, the
and
fetish
the cops
club.
Come. The cops come to arrest Denzel, but he'd gotten out ahead of them.
And then the fetish club. Oh boy. I mean, this isn't even to its credit like a normal. I don't know, Michael Bay-esque strip club. This
no.
is like, who was that one actress who was just had an enormous gut and knew it. And I was flaunting it.
I mean,
yeah.
No, you're right. This is the end of Dawn of... God, this is like a Blade.
This is like the rave scene from Matrix Reloaded.
Oh,
yeah,
this is exactly
basically.
What this is. Or the... God,
I must have started to fade at this point. What actually happens at the fetish club that's important?
It's... I mean, it's the weirdest thing. It's like just where John Lithgow goes to watch on TV the cops, you know, pursuing
yes.
Denzel.
Oh, the bar.
But it just happens to be set in a fetish club. Like,
I mean, this is like that scene from John Wick. Like, he shuts people up to watch TV. Like, his dad's yelling at him.
Also, all the performers there are wearing leather bikinis.
It's,
they all have
like
riding
crossers. And...
Yep.
It's something. It's... Again, just turn my junior into Joel Silver movie.
Yeah, because John it turns out Denzel Washington, he had been watching that movie. Look at the one that's like, "Look at me, Ma, top of the world."
White Heat.
Yeah, so he decides he's going to mimic it to lure John Lithgow out of hiding. So he's got this whole ambush set up with Ice-T,
which they showed that clip in the movie earlier, the White Heat clip,
right? Foreshadowing.
Is that James Cagney in White Heat?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if it's foreshadowing in as much as Home Alone foreshadows it. Like, it's just like, hey, that'd be easy. Which is great.
Yeah, so he's up there on top of the roof of the drug lab making this big speech.
Well, and most importantly, he's taking credit for John Lithgow's crimes.
Right.
In order to make John Lithgow come out and, like, reveal himself.
Well, John Lithgow just wants to see him, you know, be punished and not actually die, so he gets real pissed off when he sees that.
And he also, I think, wants to be a famous serial killer. I think he wants to be known as a crazy guy, and he does not want Denzel to take credit for his crimes.
And then Denzel then sets off an explosion that blows up the drug lab in half the building.
So, I have to ask Nick...
Which, I mean, I'm sorry, man. It's Ice-T's business still, so I wonder if he's like, yo, that was not part of the park. He's like, he did what? We didn't all get out.
I do have to ask Nick one thing about Denzel in the scene. Would you say he's being a wild and crazy guy?
I hate you so much.
I am so proud of myself right now, and I know Nick's gonna punch me later, but I don't care.
He's so shitty and gray right now. But yeah, so at this point, Denzel Washington is climbing. They call it the Two Towers, which back then meant something else.
Oh, yeah. It's the towers. It's the dilapidated towers where Denzel wanted to build the children's center on that site.
Right. And then, of course, John Lithgow and him fight to the death. Like, it's a very
After
specific
he, like,
tricks scene.
And like, look at the camera. And then John Lithgow looks at the camera to see, like, a whole world sees John Lithgow's face and he's still alive.
And again,
and people are all like, who?
He's supposed to be dead.
Well, it's been 7 years.
Well, so I think someone does recognize him because they say his name.
Yeah, someone who has a true crime podcast recognizes him. What was that woman who killed those American who was in Italy? And
oh, Amanda Knox?
Yeah, if you saw a picture of Amanda Knox right now, would you recognize her?
No.
No.
I might.
But that's the point. Like, 7 years later, no one recognizes John Lithgow because it's John Lithgow. Remember that crazy guy who killed 10 people 7 years ago? No, I don't.
I'd recognize him more for doing the best Rudy Giuliani impersonation ever.
Now, remember, the TV news people all saw the confrontation at the fair with Denzel Washington a few years before, so evil John Lithgow might be pretty well known.
Well, even so, that was 7 years ago. What viral video do you remember from 2014?
Oh, there were those badgers, and they were looking for a snake.
I believe there was a some shaking going on
in
Harlem style.
What was that World War III one? You know, fires the missile.
That's way earlier than 2014. But anyway, there's no chance that even in an 80s viral video sort of clip that anyone would recognize him.
Yeah. No. And I guess it'd be less likely then because you couldn't just look up who was that and remember anything. But regardless, John Lithgow and
he gets cable guy Lithgow.
Yeah, dude. Because Ice-T's buddies plug in like giant jumper cables into the tower. And sat.
Well, as though that was what they were supposed to do, which is really crazy because they're climbing and Denzel goes, "Now!" And they attach electrodes to this thing like he's fucking Frankenstein's monster and fries the guy.
And pre-CGI electricity waves go up to the towers.
Yeah, that's not enough to kill him, but so then at that point, like, throws him off the tower and impales him on something and he's like, "You got the point?"
Yeah.
I'm like, that's a James Bond pun.
That is bad.
It sure is.
And doesn't Denzel get his arm punctured by one of these things?
Yeah. Yes. Someone gets his hand impaled on something.
It's Denzel. I think he gets his bicep impaled on something or his arms.
Luckily,
somehow.
He walks it off and doesn't bleed to death immediately, which is cool.
Yeah.
But that's how this movie kind of just, and then it wraps up pretty neatly, actually. Yeah. I don't know if we convey how crazy this movie truly is.
Well, no. Everything we've said, you know, multiply that by two.
Yeah, it sounds crazy when you describe it, but actually watching it, it's very clever.
Well, it's a roller coaster. I mean, and I know people say, it's a coaster ride, like it's some fucking Leonard Maltin review, but like, I mean it, you just, it once it starts going, you want the crazy to keep crazying, and it does.
Can we talk about the actual ending, which is Lithgow gets impaled and immediately, there's like 3 minutes left of this movie, all the news casters turn on, they don't turn on, but they're completely on Denzel's side. It's like, oh, this proves that he was innocent the whole time, which no it doesn't, it just proves he impaled a man.
And he proves he impaled a man who can no longer testify, so he's like, yeah, he did it. Wipes his hands of the whole thing. Luckily, my partner, who might have information, is also dead, so he can't validate any of this either.
Well, there is the whole matter of he had shot his own minion, who was hanging from the tower earlier.
Even so,
yeah, they all recognized who Blake was.
Okay, that's cool.
That's great, but that doesn't mean he did it. If you recognize the dude on the street, that doesn't mean he did the thing that just saw happen.
The final shot in this movie is somebody from Proto Entertainment Tonight is like going up and trying to interview Denzel and his wife. And he's like going, oh, I can say anything right now? I can say anything? Hey, here, I'll tell you what I want to say. And then he like reaches over and switches
the camera.
He turns off the camera. Yeah, and he's like, fuck you.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And that's literally the end of the movie.
Yeah, he turns off the movie. He says, go home. Why are you still here? Go home. But yeah, this movie's fantastic. I can't... Because it's John Lithgow, and if you're like me, and you first saw him as Dick the Alien, pleasant old Dick the Alien, you don't know him as crazy. And it's been a long time since even on this podcast we covered a crazy John Lithgow.
Yeah, Cliffhanger.
Cliffhanger, which
Sign up for the Patreon.
Oh, Dick Solomon. I miss you.
Jane Curtin was there.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt was there.
Oh, God, and French.
What's French Stewart.
French Stewart, that piece of shit.
Why are you bad-mouthing French Stewart?
He's terrible. And he's not working anymore, so I guess I was right.
He does a lot of voiceover stuff these days.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Probably Nickelodeon kid stuff?
Yeah.
He has that kind of a voice, yeah. But anyway... John Lithgow had a phase where he was this scene-chewing crazy person, and it's great to see it again. And also, I mean, Denzel Washington doesn't have to do anything anymore because he's worth $1 billion. So he doesn't, usually. He doesn't do much. But he is so much fun to be in a shitty movie. Like, and this is the period where he would just play, like, cops all the time. And it's cool to see him. Matt, final thoughts?
Yeah, this movie is definitely worth seeing. It's really clever and really enjoyable, and everyone does a good job acting in it.
Well, first and foremost, French Stewart was also actually in the sitcom Mom for 37 episodes, according to IMDb, as Chef Rudy. But in terms of this movie, I think it was a mistake to just dump this on HBO. I think it should have gotten a theatrical release because Lithgow and Denzel save it. I mean, they actually do some really interesting stuff. It's weak material, and the ending is garbage, but they're still doing a lot with some very thin material, and I think they should have gotten more recognition for it.
There you go.
Yeah, this is a really fun movie. Very bonkers. They definitely don't make this kind of movie anymore. I mean, everything goes to 11. It does kind of get a little slow towards the end, you know, the whole trying to make Denzel paranoid. But it's really fun. I would suggest a nice double feature with this and I Saw the Devil, which is kind of a reversal. That's where a cop tortures a killer. So in this one, you have the killer torturing the cop, and I Saw the Devil, you have a cop torturing a killer. It's nice bookends.
Yeah.
That would be a very fun and disturbing double feature. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this stinks of stupid 90s action movies, mm-hmm. and I kind of love it for that. Like, it's not quite to the level of, like copaganda that you get in some stuff. It's more of a cat and mouse, mm-hmm. and it's crazy cat and crazy mouse, and Kevin Pollak was there. I don't know. It's weird that these movies are forgotten, but I guess there was a whole backlash against the whole genre for a while. But yeah, seek these out. There's still practical effects in this. I mean, obviously there's no good electricity, but you know, there's real explosions and a lot of squibs, and that's fun. So
yeah.
Anyway, when you're listening to this, by the time you listen to this, Cineprob will have riffed it. So if you want to hear us talking about the movie over the movie instead. Join the Patreon for Cineprov. That's patreon.com/Cineprov. And of course, we have our own Myopia Cineprov, where we release, at least depending on your level, at least one movie a month. At certain levels, it's three movies every 2 months. So you get an extra one there if you join. So that's it. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Settis. Mission Briefing is hosted by John Copsey. Podcasts are edited by Daniel Settis, and Patreon is edited by Nick Hoffman. Our engineer is Nick Hoffman. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod from Incomtech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.